You know, look around.
I don't know. Look, they look like rabble rousers.
I think we're safe.
Hi, Dave. How are you? Just great, thanks. My day in the box?
Yeah.
Called the box. I don't know why. What kind of box is it? Are they keeping busy? You guys are keeping busy.
All right. Well, colleagues. All right. Let's call this Thursday, June 15th, 2 p.m. meeting to order. We have one item on the agenda today. I do not have the script that the mayor usually reads. Oh, before I say this part?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Carla, will you please call the roll?
Here.
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 Phew. Oh.
Please call the first item.
Item 695, replace code pertaining to private for hire transportation in the city.
Commissioner Saltzman.
Thank you, Mayor and colleagues. Today we are here considering a series of code revisions to the private for hire code section. In 2015, the City Council adopted new regulations to reflect the changing industry and incorporate transportation network companies into our code. At that time, Council made a commitment to come back with changes for other parts of the industry, which are affected by the private for hire code, and that's what we have before us today. Those changes focus on the following sections: non-emergency medical transport, shuttles, executive town cars, seasonal permits, pedicabs and quadricycles, wheelchair accessible vehicles, and the civil penalty table. And as you recall, last month the council did issue a subpoena to Uber for more information on the Grayball software. So we think it makes the most sense to wait until that issue is fully played out before we come back with code changes to the TNC taxi section of our private for hire code to ensure that any findings from the subpoena inform our regulations in a meaningful way. So as I said, we will be coming back to council in the fall with additional revisions focused on transportation network companies and taxis. And I look forward to that dialogue when it comes. I'll now turn it over to Director Leah Treat, who is joined by her colleagues, and take it away, Leah.
Thank you, Commissioner, Mayor, members of the Council. So I'm just going to do a little intro, and then I'll step back and let – there's too many members of my team for us to all fit up here, so I'll step back after my opening remarks and let them come up and do the presentation. So you all are very probably painfully aware that the regulation of private-for-hire vehicles has been in the headlines in Portland, across the country, and actually across the globe. So much of the attention, understandably, has focused on taxis and TNCs like Uber and Lyft. But the private-for-hire industry actually is quite large and encompasses much more than just taxis and TNCs. It includes transportation options such as diverse as pedicabs, limousines, and medical transport. In our bureau, being responsible for the safety of Portlanders who use our streets, we have to make sure that our private-for-hire regulations are current with the best practices and responsive to the current environment and are consistent across the industry. And we also care about providing a level playing field for fair competition. And most importantly, we really care about protecting consumers. So the changes that we're bringing forward for you to consider today do help us achieve these fundamental goals. For example, if the changes that we are proposing are adopted, pedicabs, quadricycles, and non-emergency medical transport will be fully covered by our existing code. In addition, we have created seasonal permits that will give private-for-hire operators more flexibility to serve in our market. And I'd also like to highlight that these changes include a new wheelchair-accessible service subsidy. The subsidy is going to help offset the cost of providing wheelchair-accessible vehicles. And this is also about equity. Consistently providing ready access to these vehicles is crucial to making our transportation system serve all Portlanders. We also know from our recent experience, that the private-for-hire industry is constantly evolving. Quadricycles are now a familiar sight in parts of Portland. We're seeing dramatic growth in the demand for non-emergency medical transport, and we anticipate this dynamic environment to be the new norm. So that means that our rules are going to have to evolve too. And I believe that the changes that my team are now going to present to you today reflect that and will help us govern effectively. I'm going to turn it over to them. Thanks.
Thank you.
Hi, good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler and commissioners. My name is Mark Williams. I'm the Private for Hire Division Manager.
My name is Matthew Erickson. I'm the Private for Hire Program Manager.
The ordinance you have before you today, if approved, will replace current Chapter 1640 Private for Hire regulations. All the recommended changes have been approved by the Advisory Committee. For non-emergency medical transportation, this section was suspended back in December of 2015. The previous code was referenced via an administrative rule. Council directed us to collaborate with the industry regarding this section of the code. Through a subcommittee and a larger advisory committee, we did what council requested. And we are recommending the inclusion of section 1640-700, non-emergency transportation, into the existing code. Some of the changes I'd like to highlight for the industry are non-emergency medical transportation can now, companies can now certify their own drivers. Non-emergency medical transportation companies can certify their own vehicles. And the driver disqualifying factors are consistent with the rest of the industry. For pedicabs and quadricycles, this section also was suspended back in 2015. Again, we received clear direction from council to engage the industry, and we did so as requested. A few of the changes in our proposed language include the addition of quadricycles. These are the four-wheel multi-passenger bikes, such as Bruce Cycle Portland. Companies can certify their own drivers and vehicles. A requirement for quadricycles drivers to carry a valid driver's license. Pedicab drivers that do not possess a valid driver's license can complete a Bureau-approved bicycle safety course prior to being permitted. For executive town car, we revised the definition for the executive town car. An administrative rule that displays a list of approved vehicles will be that can be permitted as executive town cars as part of this recommendation. New vehicles can be added to this list through the advisory committee, committee's recommendation to the Bureau Director. There are a couple of reasons why we feel like this change is important. First, we want to make sure we meet the consumer's expectations. When you reserve a luxury vehicle, you should expect one to arrive. Second, the second reason is to maintain the integrity of what is considered to be an executive vehicle and the industry in which they operate. For shuttles, this section, we are recommending a change in the definitions. Previous language defined a shuttle as a vehicle that operated solely along a fixed route. For example, the shuttle may travel from the airport to three or four area hotels and back again. The industry made it very clear that this is not the way that the majority of the companies operate. As a result, we revised the definitions to now include fixed route, reservation, and on-demand shuttle. A reservation shuttle is a service that can be picked up, a service that can be scheduled to pick up a passenger and take them to the airport, bus station, or train station. An on-demand service is an option for passengers arriving at the Portland Airport who are willing to share a ride with other passengers. Company operating responsibilities. This change simply enhances and clarifies the language that we already have in code. We currently have language clear language as it relates to the driver's conduct, but while they're driving in an automobile with the passenger. We wanted the companies to partner with us and set clear expectations for drivers, even when they're not traveling with passengers. Vehicle age exemption. Previous code allowed vehicles to remain in service for a maximum of 10 years. This addition to code will allow limited passenger transportation vehicles, executive town cars, and qualified WAVE vehicles to apply for a 2-year vehicle age exemption. vehicles such as this amazing restoration by the Vintage Tour Bus Company could apply for a vehicle age exemption and be permitted for 2 years.
I just saw that one on Sunday. Is that the one that was in the Rose Festival?
In the parade, I believe so. Ben.
Yeah, that's a yes. Cool bus.
After 2 years, they can reapply again for an additional 2 years and 2 years after that. Later, I hope we have the pleasure to hear from the owner of the vehicle in this photo, the owner of Vintage Tour Bus Company. Huh. Seasonal permits allows vehicles that operate seasonally the ability to obtain a 4-month seasonal permit. If you own a limousine company that operates during prom season, this is a good option for you. This makes it more affordable for companies to have for the companies that have a seasonal business model. This may also allow companies to save money by not having to insure a vehicle for a full year just to maintain their company permit. Accessible service. So in December 2015, Council directed the Bureau to work with the Advisory Committee to address some of the concerns around accessible service. A few challenges we identified include insufficient number of wheelchair vehicles, wheelchair-accessible vehicles. We know larger companies are able to provide vehicles on the road, but smaller companies may not have enough drivers or enough way of business to keep vehicles on the road at all times. Longer than expected wait times. Community members have reported excessive times for WAVE vehicles. Customer service. Customer service levels continue to be a challenge for the industry. Higher cost to operate. The company's made it very clear to us that these vehicles are more expensive to purchase and to maintain. Less desirable for drivers. Due to passenger load and unload times, drivers may fulfill fewer rides while operating WAVE vehicles compared to other on-demand services. Now that we understand what the challenges are, we establish a list of goals to address them. Increase accessibility. Let's ensure that all available WAVE vehicles are on the road. Decrease wait times. Your transportation should always arrive in 30 minutes or less. Elevate the standard of service through passenger assistance, sensitivity, and safety training, which will be required for all WAVE drivers in this program. Offset vehicle operating and maintenance expenses, cost and maintenance expenses. Provide a subsidy to companies for each fulfilled ride to offset maintenance costs and to provide a financial incentive to attract more drivers.
And just to clarify, the companies are supposed to pay that, not the city, correct?
Correct. We would provide the subsidy in the first pilot period. We decided we would provide the subsidy to the company and allow the company to decide what portion to use for the vehicle maintenance and what portion would go to the driver as an incentive.
But then we are proposing that the city pays the subsidy.
Yes, I'm sorry. Yes, the city pays the subsidy.
I'm a bit concerned about that because... Anyway, we'll get into keep going.
So the subsidy comes out of the... We put a 50-cent charge on every ride, mm-hmm. So it comes out of that.
Okay.
So it's money that we bring in to fund both the accessible service and the private for hire.
So we act as the pass-through. Thank you for reminding me about the 50 cents.
Yes.
And then they are supposed to allocate it fairly?
Right. We allocate it back to them for incentivizing wheelchair-accessible rides.
But we've been doing that, right?
We're just starting to.
Okay. So we don't. How long will it be until we know if the actual drivers are satisfied with this system or not?
We plan to carefully monitor this process. We're going to be working with the WAVE dispatcher to keep track of all these calls and dispatch all of these rides. We want to work very closely with the companies. We want to work very closely with the community members that will use this service. And we're going to rely on their feedback to help us make the adjustments where necessary so that this can be a successful program.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm.
So as part of the transportation, the Accessible Transportation Fund, the subsidy, we want to implement it. And during the pilot period, our intent is to establish a citywide WAVE dispatch service. Calls will be dispatched to the approved companies by rotating calls to all participating companies equally. I think we can equally distribute the demand for this service, ensuring that more vehicles are out on the road more frequently. However, a caller can always request a provider of their choice. The dispatch provider will monitor all the wave calls. Participating companies would receive the subsidy we talked about. Companies can use the funds to offset the maintenance cost of the provider of the vehicles and to provide drivers a financial incentive. Our expectation for these companies is to use a very small portion of these funds for their vehicle maintenance and to use the other the remaining balance towards the driver incentives. During the pilot period, we are proposing a subsidy of $15 per wave ride. We currently average about 1,200 rides a month. We estimate that we will increase this number to about 1,600 rides per month. The estimated budget to fund the program is about $600,000 for the first year. This includes the dispatch service contract. We currently have an RFP out that actually closes tomorrow. The program is entirely funded through the existing 50-cent surcharge, and this surcharge can be adjusted accordingly to meet the future program needs. We hope that by addressing some of the current challenges that the community members have reported to us, that we will encourage them to use this service more frequently. And upon conclusion, I'd like to invite Nicole to maybe say a little bit more about the process and how we got here.
So Nicole Sharon, Office of Equity and Human Rights. So for those of you who weren't on council 2 years ago when we started this process, we had this challenge of how are we going to have these companies that don't see themselves as transit providers be available to people who have disabilities and who have been historically underserved even by some of the transportation that was available. So back then, I had this notion of, well, we need to incentivize those rides, and we need to mandate that everyone do it. And so that was great that I had the idea, but then the folks at PBOT really had to take that idea and turn it into a reality. And so Mark came up with this really amazing three-tiered process that we're now in the second tier of, which is the dispatch system. And so with the dispatch, we're really hoping that we do see a bigger bump in more satisfaction. We've definitely hit some hurdles along the way, and I still get a sense from the community that there is some dissatisfaction. And so we're really hoping that the dispatch brings us into this new level of, one, being able to track better, and then, two, being able to incentivize both the companies and the drivers, and so that there won't be that kind of stigma of, oh gosh, I've got to like take more time to do this wheelchair accessible ride when I could be doing a ride that's much quicker and gets me more money, right? So with the dispatch system, I'm thinking your question, Commissioner Fritz, was how long will we know? And I think it's going to be a good 6 to 8 months for us to really see what that looks like. But I do really want to ask all of you to really make it clear to our Portland community that this is available and that we are thinking about it. Because the people with disabilities have so historically been left out of this transportation system, there are still a lot of people that are saying there are no options. And so we're working really hard to make these options, but we don't necessarily have the means to let everybody know. And I think all of you have a very wide audience that with your help, we can really get the word out, not just that the system is available to them, but to also give us that feedback and complain, because without that, we don't know what's happening on the street and we want to be able to fix it.
Thank you.
Next, we made some changes to the civil penalty table. The previous table shown here required the industry to the service providers to navigate through many rows and text to locate the appropriate penalty. In the new code, every section or subsection ends with a violation statement and a penalty class. This is similar to the way penalties are listed in the Oregon revised statute. The new table, now only 5 rows, offers a quick, effective way to easily locate the penalty class and the associated fees. Finally, as requested by council, we have raised the penalties for code violations. The slide here shows a simple illustration of what you can expect to see in the new code. And that is the conclusion of my presentation. I'd like to, if I could, Mayor, invite Mike Greenfield, who is the advisory chair, if he's here. I didn't see him walk in the door.
Could we take a few questions first,
Mike? Sure, why not?
Sure.
While we're waiting for Mike.
Mark, thank you for this presentation. And I got a briefing previously, and I think you've done really, you and your team have done a really good job. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
A couple questions. The quadricycles, which we see particularly in Northwest Portland, sponsored by a brew pub or something. Under our law, can a quadricycle operator serve alcohol to the people that are pedaling?
No, that's the short answer.
Okay. So to quote Shakespeare, that is more honored in the breach than the observance, which is also why the folks pedaling tend to be very rambunctious. So I hope we can do some spot enforcement of that. Second, I have anecdotally noticed a lot of Uber, Lyft, Google Prism, and other operators in town that have out-of-state license plates, Washington and California primarily. And the Google Prism are exclusively California with no markings on the vans. What is the state of our law in terms of when someone, does an operator at some point have to obtain Oregon license plates?
Well, yes and no. So the law allows students, if you go to school here, you don't have to change your license plate over. You don't have to go and get a new driver's license. I believe the law says if you're here for 30 days, after 30 days, you do need to go and obtain an Oregon driver's license. You do need to go and obtain, obviously, Oregon registration and
license plates. That's if you live here.
If you live here, correct.
So what if you're operating a commercial vehicle? Is there a rule that says at a certain point, if you're operating exclusively here, that you have to obtain Oregon license?
I haven't confirmed
Oregon
that.
Plate?
Yeah, I haven't confirmed that, but we can definitely look into it. I would assume that it's very similar to the residential rule, but we can definitely look into that.
I've raised this with Mac Grum recently, and just because I've noticed that, for example, Google Prime runs their entire fleet off of California license plates in unmarked vehicles. I'd just like to know what the rules are. And if the rules are you don't have to switch to Oregon license plates, mm-hmm. so be it. But it does seem like there are more and more full-time delivery vehicles in our city that have out-of-state license plates. And I'd just be interested in a primer on what is allowed and is there a requirement at some point that you switch?
Commissioner, to that point, I can speak to that a bit. Because of the way the TNCs are set up, they're set up regionally based, so it's looked at more as the greater Portland area. So you will see a lot of license plates from, say, Washington for someone who does live in Vancouver, Camas, Washougal, who are coming across the river taking passengers.
Okay. Thank you. Two other questions. The 50 cents surcharge that we put on the rides to cover to create this fund to be used, as you've described, I'm curious, when we last were down in Salem defending the preemption bill that was proposed that would have preempted our ability to regulate, would that bill have also preempted our authority to levy a 50-cent charge?
Yeah.
Could you get back to us? The legislative session has not ended, Mayor, and I think we have to be vigilant. And I don't know the answer to that question about whether the preemption would have tied our hands on this.
Sure.
But if we could take a quick look at that, because actually time is of the essence on that question.
We will do indeed.
And the final question I have is for Nicole. So one of the charts we saw showed 1,200 rides, wave rides, a month, and then said that the goal is hopefully to get to, 1,200 with the goal of getting to 1,600, right? Mm-hmm. So just doing the, back of the envelope math here, that's a little under 200,000 rides a year. My understanding is that we anticipate this year across all of our systems, TNCs and cabs, there'll be approximately 7 million rides. Mm-hmm. So I guess the question is, what do we estimate actually is the market for wave rides? And what's the benchmark that we should be trying to reach?
So unfortunately, the data that we have for our disability members in our community is very poor. There's some data that comes out of the American Community Survey, but it really doesn't give us an idea. And because our past operations have historically left out folks, they were providing the service, but the service was being provided in a way that people could wait anywhere from 45 minutes to an hour to get their ride, or the ride would be canceled. The community has become a little gun-shy of actually using private-for-hire transportation, not to mention that it is more costly than having public transportation. But I think what we're seeing across the nation is that the mandate for paratransit in public transportation has gotten so high that transportation authorities can't afford it anymore. So I think we will see more and more of a community shift to having to use private for hire transportation just to get to the grocery store or even a doctor's visit. I think when we invoke the dispatch system, we will start to really get a handle of what the data is. Because we don't have, like, Uber and Lyft are great. It's an app, right? So you can really get the data of who's actually riding and when they're riding and what areas of town. We don't know that for Wave because people can use Wave and taxi and everything else. I think we'll have a better idea of how to answer that question in the 6 months to 8 months of when we start really seeing data. And with the dispatch system, I think we'll have a little bit smoother of just the customer interface with it, and we should see those numbers increase.
Yeah, and I applaud you for the system that you've worked on to try to address this challenge of providing this service when you've documented that it's more expensive and there's some disincentives in the marketplace. So I applaud you for the work you're doing. I think as we monitor the progress over time, it'd be good to have a rough sense of what's the benchmark we're heading for.
Yeah.
Currently, the optimistic projection is that would still mean about one out of every 35 rides is for someone who has the need for a Wave vehicle. That sounds low, given what we know about the percentage of Portlanders that have some kind of physical disability. I just don't know. It anecdotally seems small.
Yeah.
So it'd be interesting to know what is our projection as to what is the full utilization based on the number of people that would use this service if it was accessible.
Okay.
So thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Commissioner Udaly.
Since I wasn't here when the first rules and regulations were established, just for clarity, do we have relative parity between cab companies and TNTs around, like, background checks, licensing, and insurance?
We do.
We do. And
I would say that's debatable.
Well, I think we do, you know, all the way down to, you know, the type of vehicles. You'll obviously see some differences. Taxis are still required to have a cab with a top light, with a meter. TNCs are required to have a working app, you know, certain items in their cars. Taxis are as well. But as far as certifying their own drivers, their own vehicles, they are both able to do that, although many taxi companies choose to have us help them with that certification process. That option is still available to them.
And I'm thrilled to hear about increased or improved service for wheelchair users. I'm wondering about that $15 subsidy. I mean, to me, that seems high, considering a kind of nominal extra amount of time it takes to load and unload a wheelchair. How was that number arrived at?
So we reached out to some other cities, and we're not the only city that are struggling with, you know, trying to solve some of these problems. Some cities have gone to providing a subsidy directly to the company to help purchase, you know, the vehicle. These vehicles can run anywhere between $45,000 to $60,000, you know, by the time you equip them.
Why not? Yeah, I have one, so yeah, I know.
And then there's the maintenance, and we hear that the maintenance for these vehicles can be around $250 a month just to maintain the vehicle. Some cities will offer an incentive or a subsidy to pay for the cost of the vehicle. Some cities are offering some sort of subsidy to the drivers. I didn't find anything that was consistent throughout. I think everyone is trying a little bit of everything. I can't recall which city that went to a citywide wave dispatch that just said, we're going to take over. Larger cities like New York have mandated changes by a certain year that, you know, 20% or 30% of the fleet must be wheelchair accessible. And I think in time we'll hopefully see, you know, cars come out, companies start building wheelchair accessible vehicles, hopefully at a lower rate. Now, the companies will tell you that $15 is not enough compared to the cost it takes to provide the service. But we felt it was a good place to start.
Great. And Nicole, as far as helping spread the word, I'm interested in that conversation because, of course, after decades of being underserved and experiencing barriers, I'm sure there's a lot of potential customers who just aren't even trying. So that's something that we need to work on. And then there's also the issue that people with disabilities are disproportionately low income and that taking a cab is just not an option necessarily. So I don't know if that's something that we can also look at, but I know I've never wanted to call a cab for my son. And I do not use TNTs. I use radio cab. But I did experiment, and I tried to call for a wheelchair cab downtown 9 a.m., and there wasn't one available. So thank you for addressing that issue.
Commissioner Saltzman?
So the dispatch, the wheelchair accessible vehicle dispatch, is that going to be conducted by a private party? Is that what we're looking for?
Yeah, we're not experts when it comes to dispatching vehicles and services, but we have access to a lot of them. Yeah, that's what cab companies do, is they dispatch services. So we wanted to reach out to see if we can get a dispatch company to partner with us and really help us put together a successful, effective dispatch system. And I believe we can get there.
Would there be a dedicated telephone number?
Correct. There will be a dedicated number. I think it's going to be either 865 for WAVE or 823 for WAVE, one of the city numbers, though.
And then I was curious on the town cars. So we actually specify makes and models of what are acceptable town cars?
Correct. So we tried to follow the model of a few other cities out there that actually have a list of approved vehicles. I suspect that they were running into the same problems where you've had, an economy vehicle that was being permitted as an executive sedan. So we tried to basically emulate what we saw some of the other cities doing. We put together a list, of our own based on what we've seen from other cities, and we ran that through the advisory committee.
Okay. Thank you.
So will the 50 cents per ride cover all of the costs of the dispatch system as well as the subsidy to the drivers?
Yes. Yes.
Do we know how much we've got in that fund at this point?
I can get those numbers for you. I don't have them with me right now.
And are we confident that the TNCs are paying appropriately, that they're collecting that and giving us the full amount?
I feel fairly confident that they are, Commissioner, yes.
And we talked about maybe periodic audits of the TNCs to make sure that they are following the rules. Are we going to be doing one of those in the future?
We are. I think that we need to look at the way the information is printed on the receipt and the way that we receive that information to give us some better auditing tools. But we've had some conversations with them about that.
It might be interesting to talk with the Office of Community Technology and how do they do their audits of the franchises that we work with. And
sure.
Even with that, we often have had really large settlements with those companies. So given that there's a history of the not necessarily following all the rules in the past, it would be, I think, important to do those audits fairly regularly.
Mm-hmm. I would agree.
Okay. Thank you. And so, Mike, Greenfield isn't here, but I don't were there anybody else you wanted invited testimony? Or?
Andrea's not here. John's here. Is not here either, so I think we can move on to...
Move on to public testimony?
Yes.
Very good. Carla, how many people do we have signed up?
I have four people.
Very good. 3 minutes each. Please state your name for the record. 30 seconds before your time runs out, you'll see a yellow light. And when the light turns red and you hear lots of beeping, that means your time is up. If you're a lobbyist, please state that for a record. If you're here representing an organization, that's helpful as well. Thank you. And we don't need your full address, just name for the record.
The first three are Mark Lutweiler, or Lutweiler, Sean Kennedy, and Steve Hext, I believe is the last name.
Welcome.
Okay, sit down. Yeah, we all sit down.
Gentlemen, I don't know if you have a preferred order. If not, we'll just start left to right.
Sure. Thank you, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Mark Lutweiler. I work for the Port of Portland, and I'm the Commercial Roadway Systems Manager. I came to you today to show my support for the recommended changes that city staff has presented you today. Since May of 2016, I've been an active member of the Portland For Hire Transportation Advisory Committee. I've attended all meetings and can say that I feel that the recommended changes come to you in a fair and unbiased manner. I just want to thank all of the Portland staff and all the members of the advisory group that went into these recommended changes. We spent a lot of time out there, and I want to thank Mark behind me and Dave for all their support. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate your testimony. Good afternoon.
Hi, my name is Sean Kennedy. I own the Vintage Tour Bus Company. I noticed that you saw the bus at the Rose Festival Parade, and I noticed that the subtext sort of hid the bus, but that's actually what it looks like. So anyways, I'm just going to give you a little history on the bus. For many years, I've sort of wanted to kick around the idea of doing tours, and I love history, I love geology, and I love showing off what Oregon has to offer. And to do that, I thought, you know, it'd be really cool to do it in something different than a shuttle bus. And that's how I came up with the idea of doing the Vintage Bus. So 7 years ago, before this ordinance went into place, about the 10-year age limit, I had researched both federal and state laws to find out what it would take to make a vehicle like this street legal and for me to have the ability to use it for taking people out on tours. I've met all those requirements. It's actually certified as such. It's maintained. When I originally found the bus, you know, of course, needless to say, it was in very sad condition. You know, it was sitting out for many years, rusting away, and we have since torn the bus completely apart, have redone it, and actually it's now a 1992 Dodge one-ton pickup. It's just a very pretty one-ton pickup. But as I said, when I started the project, before I wanted to spend the money on doing this and doing the conversion, I wanted to make sure that once I was done with it, that I could use it legally and use it for that purpose of doing tours. I've met all those requirements. So when I brought the bus back last year to Portland, because I did the restoration all over in Idaho, I was actually really shocked when I heard there was this 10-year limit, age limit, on a vehicle being allowed to use for the purpose that I wanted to use it for. I've had people actually come up to me and say, you know, that is a really, really cool bus. And I asked them, I said, well, what do you like about it? And they said, it seems so Portland. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it is. It adds another level of interest to the city and to the to tourism in this town. That's part of the reason I went for this. It's sort of on the same vein as the double-decker bus. And it's very similar to what San Francisco has with their vintage trolleys that they run up Market Street. You know, they're these gorgeous trolleys from all over the world, different ages. But it's another element to that city that creates part of the excitement about that city. And that's how I felt about this bus. I also felt that it was something not just unique, but something, well, once again, I just put it back as to, it's another thing that made Portland a little more unique. It's like the pedal bikes. It's like the paddle boats I see on the Willamette. You know, it's just another one of those things that makes the city cool. Thank you.
Sir, can I ask you a question?
Yes.
The way this is worded, it's 10 years after the vehicle manufacture date, and then there's a 2-year vehicle age limit exemption. So I just want to make, I want to understand this. Under the proposed rules before us, would you only be able to operate for 2 years?
From what I understand, yes. And then I have to renew.
So right now,
technically, I cannot operate here. I am registered in Clackamas County in Lake Oswego.
But is it your understanding that the 2-year exemption is renewable?
Yes. Yes. That's the impression I'm under.
Seeing a lot of head nodding. So that's what was, yeah, that's helpful. And then I guess the other question is, because your example just got my attention. So this 10-year rule is pegged off of the manufacturer date. But as you kind of suggest, you could buy a vehicle and replace every single part of the vehicle, at which point the manufacturer date is not really that relevant. And in fact, some people...
I think how vehicles are registered is by the original manufacturer date, even after you alter it. So I know that if it were an antique vehicle, it's registered the year that it was made.
I see.
Even though there were alterations made to it.
So administratively, the 2-year exemption that's renewable would work for you?
Yes, yes. Because the bus is 1945.
Yeah.
Just a few years old.
It looks like Ken Kesey's old bus.
Yeah.
Excuse me?
Sorry,
I think it's much prettier than Ken Kesey's bus.
Okay.
But it's very comfortable inside. I know I'm done with my time, but...
What's your niche?
My niche is wine tours, gorge tours, and I include history, geology, and history. So I do a lot of, like, Oregon Pioneer history. I talk about the Missoula floods. I talk about the Columbia Gorge Highway, the history, the what brought that about. So depending on what area I go to, and I'll go as far as the coast and up to the Dalles, down in the Willamette Valley to some of the wineries, I'll talk about the soils and how the Missoula flood affected your grape growing in those areas, stuff like that.
Thank you, sir.
What's the name of your company?
The Vintage Tour Bus Company. I have a brochure right here if you'd like one.
So I was in the parade with about 25 mayors from around the state, and I guess the bus was just going by us. You were starting a couple of slots ahead of us, and it was an instant favorite. People thought it was pretty great. So thanks for the hard work. There's a lot of elbow grease put into that project.
I've spent over 6 years restoring it. I worked on the TV show Grimm for 5.5, and so I spent every penny I made off of Grimm sinking into that bus so I could bring it back and do something fun with it.
That's great. Good for you. And thank you for that.
Okay. Well, I hope you will approve me allowing me to move my business to Portland.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, we'd love to see that. Thank you. Good afternoon, sir.
Thank you. Steve Hicks, GM of Broadway Cab, and I've been with Broadway about 28 years. Just a quick word of support for Mark and everything that he's brought before you, his group. I just want to say thank you to the council for approving me to be a part of the committee, and I did participate in that. And also everybody on the first two rows, not only did I get to consult with the committee, but each of them I've spent all the time I felt I needed with each of them. And so they've been available, and I can just say I support what's coming forward. The way the NEMT code applies to those companies that limit themselves to NEMT service, and the way the new WAVE program is limited at this point to the taxi companies, I think I can see it all being good. So just a word of support.
Thank you, sir. We appreciate that.
The last two who signed up are Kirk Foster and Patricia Montgomery.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I guess I'll go first. I hadn't planned on testifying. I came down to actually listen, but I'm from one of the smaller companies, and I like to say that the TNCs into the market is a big improvement for the industry. I remember people complaining in the taxi cab I drove about waiting for hours for a taxi, and they get one in 2 minutes. what I wanted to address after listening to Chloe was she asked, was it on a level playing field now? And I don't think we've gotten there. I don't think we've gotten there on checking on the insurance, about people being on the streets, about the cameras. Someone's been killed in one of the Uber cars that may not have been Portland. But do we wait till it happens in Portland? I think the taxi industry has been devastated. Drivers are struggling. Businesses are going under. Have we looked at the impact of 6,000 vehicles placed on the streets with the taxi cabs and how it's going to make survival for everybody? The taxis take low-income people, cash-paying customers, customers they take risk on picking up. What I'd like the city to see happen is a study on what is this real impact on the industry. I spent 30 years in it. It's because I love it. I love the people in this city. And I hate to see the drivers that we have leaving the city because they can't make a living. There's room for everybody. But let's look at that level paying field because I don't think we're there. Thank you.
Thank you. We appreciate your testimony.
Could you just give us your name again, please?
Patricia Montgomery, New Rural City Cab Company.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
My name is Kirk Foster. I'm with Wapato Shores, NEMT Transportation, and I'm also the NEMT rep on the advisory board. I wanted to echo what Steve had said, that I really appreciated the time that we got with Mark and everyone to work and work through getting everything, getting all the codes sorted out and getting all the, you know, the hiccups in the code corrected that were in from the last revision. So I would appreciate the time to be able to be involved in that. I do support all the changes that are going through, but I did want to kind of revisit and kind of give my opinion on the wave subsidy program and kind of emphasize how important I think that is. A lot of what people don't understand is that the, kind of the way the ADA works nationally is that companies essentially are required by law to subsidize the service, whether it be putting an elevator in or a ramp or whatever. In Oregon, transportation has always had a real serious problem in that given that our cab companies are structured only as independent contractors, the companies can't legally actually subsidize the cab rides by, you know, paying the additional money, the additional fees, the additional cost of the vehicles, the additional cost of fuel, and the additional time costs because and so basically the way or Portland has always done this is to basically penalize the cab companies for not providing a parity in service. But the cab companies really can't do anything about it because all the drivers are technically independent contractors under Oregon law, and they're all basically an independent business, to where the only way the system before would basically be a cab driver would have to basically take a significant cut in their individual pay and what they could take home to their families in order to provide subsidized, in order to provide accessible transportation. Because, again, the cab the wheelchair vans are significantly more expensive to buy. They're significantly more expensive to maintain and significantly more expensive to fuel. And then there is the time, that the added time and added attention that a driver needs to provide to the passenger to make sure their wheelchair is safely secured, especially if everybody is around wheelchairs a lot. Getting them safely secured is a real challenge when you're dealing with universal equipment because so many wheelchairs are just difficult to attach to. So it takes some time to look at every new wheelchair and make sure you're securing it safely. So all of those extra costs, in my company, for example, we use Prii or Priuses or whatever for our ambulatory customers. And in our company internally, depending on whether we're using a small wheelchair ramp van or one of the big lift vans ranging, in our company we pay anywhere from 200 to 300% is what our cost is on a wheelchair ride, depending on which vehicle we're using. And so when you're looking at the cost of the subsidy, that's kind of the, you know, for my own internal numbers, that's what you kind of have to look at. If the city's going to provide that subsidy that the companies themselves can't provide because the independent contractor set up, that's the baseline that I think should be used to determine the fee. Now, whether 15 is appropriate, I'm not sure what the average cab fee is or the average fare for a cab ride is, but the subsidy should be something like the cost is 200 to 300%, depending on the size of the wheelchair involved. So I think that when you're looking at $15, based on my numbers internally, that's actually a little low to what the cost is going to actually have to be, because you're looking at 2 to 3 times the fuel costs and 2 to 3 times the equipment costs, and then you've got the added maintenance costs. So I just want to stress that if the city really wants to encourage small business owners to bring wheelchair vans to the public, that's the kind of numbers the subsidy has to look at, is a 200 to 300% subsidy. And you know, my idea was originally that perhaps we do it, and however the accounting department thinks it's appropriate, was that we would use something on the order of, if the fare was $20, the city would kick in another $20 or another $25 and basically do a percentage on the fare. But that might be too complicated on the bookkeeping end, so that's out of my purview. But that's what I wanted to focus on, was to make sure everyone really understands that you're looking at 200 to 300% of the cost to the driver or the owner of the vehicle or whoever's bearing the cost for an equivalent ride.
Great. Thank you for your testimony. We appreciate it.
Thanks for that clarity, Kirk. I think I've acclimated too much to how much more expensive it is to offer.
Yeah, it's shocking how much.
Insurance, too, since your van's worth twice as much.
Yeah,
insurance is higher.
I forgot to.
Patricia, I wanted to say that I share your concerns as well, how we are kind of diluting and undermining jobs and adding who knows how many cars to the roads. It's totally valid concerns.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Anybody else wanted to testify? Colleagues, any further questions before we send this along? Very good. This is a first reading of a non-emergency ordinance. It moves to second reading, and we are adjourned. Thank you, everybody, for being here.